Start the recording. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Q4 Breaking Blindness Barriers meeting here on November 22nd, 2025. Breaking Blindness Barriers is a group of people that get together to discuss the strategies and workarounds that we have discovered to get around those pesky barriers that are unfortunately part of our lives as blind and low vision people. So it's all about being a collective effort to empower each other, whether you're an attendee of the meeting or whether you're listening to us after the fact in the podcast. Either way, it doesn't matter. We're here to help empower all of us that are blind and low vision. My name is Julian Vargas. My website is www.techjv.com. That's www.tech. J as in John, V as in Victor.com. If you wish to reach me by phone, that can be done by calling area code 818-794-9554. And all my contact info, including email, is found on the website www.techjv.com. I want to thank the folks at AIRS LA, the audio, internet, radio, or reading service of Los Angeles, for taking the recording of this meeting and making it available to even more people all over the world via podcast. I really appreciate that they do that because it just helps us get the word out further and out there, and also helps those of us that want to go back and review something and an easy way to do so. These meetings are free, of course, to attend, and I will never charge to attend BBB meetings. However, there are costs associated with running this, mainly the cost of the Zoom conference, which seems to increase every year. So, if you've got a little change sitting around and are motivated to do so and find that this meeting and podcast is of help to you and you want to put it to a good cause, trust me, we will put it to a good cause and help offset the cost of running these meetings. AIRS LA also is a nonprofit organization. And again, I just mentioned they make it possible for this to be a podcast. So if you go to www.airsla.org, AIRSLA.org, I'm sure they've got info there on how to donate if you wish to do so. So this is where we get to the announcements that I mentioned earlier. These are things that are of interest to people who are blind and low vision, particularly in the Southern California area. The first announcement that I have here is that iOS 26.1 recently became available, and this brought some bug fixes, and as well as Braille, fixes to Braille issues that people were having with the original iOS 26 when it came out in September. The one real important one that got squashed was that loss of voice that people were experiencing when they went from iOS 18 to 26. And that was a real bad problem because if you didn't have or have a way to recover from that or have access to a pair of eyes somehow, it made life miserable for you. So I'm glad that Apple has fixed that. So if you've been waiting for the word that it's safe to do this upgrade based on that particular bug, I'm here to tell you that that one has been squashed. If you check with www.applevis.com, that's APPLE, V as in Victor, I as in India, S as in Sam, then that is a place where you can go find all kinds of information about the latest information available about these updates. Hold on a second. And the next thing, so speaking of Apple Viz, is that Apple Viz has a really good article about all the smart glasses options for those of us that are blind and low vision. It is titled Comparison of All the New Smart Glasses for the Blind. It's in their section that they recently started, where they allow discussions of things that are not Apple related. Another thing in the news is that Vispero slash Freedom Scientific is now requiring a Vispero account to be created and to be used to log into when updating to JAWS 2026. So this catches some people by surprise. Even though they've put it out there in at certain channels, not everybody tunes into them. So you go to you're upgrading, thinking that it'll be like it is year to year, and you're suddenly hit with the screen that you have to create an account or log in with one to continue with the process. So even though they give you the option to do that on the screen that comes up, I prefer to do it beforehand. So, JAWS, ZoomText, and Fusion are the software that are affected by this change. So I recommend creating the account beforehand by going to their portal. I think it's portal.vispero.com. That's portal, PORTAL, dot VISPERO dot COM. And follow the instructions there, create the account. It's pretty easy to create, and it's not very invasive. They just want some real basic things, and they're going to have you verify your email by sending you a link. And once you do that and create your username and password, you're set. And when you log into JAWS 2026 with this, presumably you shouldn't have to ever have to log in again because it should hopefully remember it, or so they say. So one thing I can tell you, just as a tip, is that that screen is not compatible with password managers, which we're going to talk about a little bit later on. I'm one who uses those, so I literally had to copy and paste the username and complicated, long, strong password that I created for that site into that user field on that screen. So I hope that eventually Vispero will fix that and make it so that you can use a password manager, because after all, that's one way we stay safe online. I'm probably going to go ahead and have another meeting in December, maybe early January, although I prefer to have it in December. I usually have it. It's called the Holiday Hangout. It's kind of just like an informal, more social kind of thing where we all get to kind of hang out and talk to each other and not really participate in a formal presentation or discussion or moderated discussion. So stay tuned to your inbox for that. One of the things I do want to discuss at this meeting is the future of BBB. I'm having some thoughts about maybe changing some things, and I want to get your input. So if you really enjoy these meetings and you regularly attend, please be sure you're at that one. And if you don't regularly attend, please try your best to attend it because, again, I'd like to hear from as many of you as possible so I can take your feedback and consider it when making changes. So, I'm going to go right on ahead into our main discussion topic here. I called it online self-defense. I sh maybe should have called it digital self-defense. But anyway, it's not a thing about fighting technique or martial arts or firing weapons here. It's about doing something very similar, but less violent. It's about keeping ourselves safe when we are out there in the world of the internet. And these days, to transact almost anything now, it's either easier to do so, or in some cases, the only way that you can do it is via the internet or these apps. So we hear all the time about data breaches that happen, and we want to know what are things that we can do to keep safe. So I'm going to share a few of my techniques, and I'm really hoping that all of you who are here will also share some of yours so that, again, we can have a nice, robust list of techniques and strategies that we use here to keep ourselves safe when browsing online. So the main thing to keep in mind here, and I hate the way this sounds, but you have to be suspicious of just about anything that you see or that's thrown at you when you're online, when you're reading your email, when you're running your browser, especially doing Google searches, when you're on social media, things like that. You have to really look at things carefully and critically. It doesn't mean that we have to completely cut ourselves off and live under a rock and be totally paranoid, but I think, you know, a little degree of carefulness goes a long way. So that's what this is about. Dealing with phone calls, because some of this does come in on the phone. I say do not answer phone calls from numbers that you don't recognize, people that are not in your contact list, or companies that are entities that you do business with. So the only exception to this is if you're expecting a call. Like, for example, if you are waiting for an Uber ride or delivery or something like that, Or you called maybe your doctor's office and you don't have all their info in your contact list. Sometimes they may call you back from a number that you don't recognize. And, if it's from the same area code that you're expecting, things like that, then it might be okay to answer that call, at least for that occasion. But in general, I think it just makes more sense at this point to not answer calls from numbers that you don't recognize, even if it's your same prefix and area code. These days, the hackers like to do something called neighbor spoofing, which is where they spoof the caller ID information that your phone sees shows you on the screen, and that VoiceOver plays for you, or whatever screen reader you're using plays for you. And it sounds like it's a nearby or local number, but it's not. It's fake. That information can very easily be spoofed. There are services out there that you can pay very little money for that will let you do exactly that and make it look like you're calling from wherever you want to show like you're calling from. If you do answer such a call, the best thing to do is to hang up. Don't wait and engage somebody who talks to you. Because if you do, that just sends a signal back to somebody that, hey, this is a live one here. Somebody actually answers his phone. Let's put their number on other lists, or let's sell that number to people that are looking to do some bad stuff or to market you. If it is legit, they will leave you a message with contact info, and they'll probably call your name as well and tell you what it is that they're calling about. I put that on my greeting, actually. I specify that if you are calling me from a number I don't recognize, that I'm probably not going to answer you. So please leave me a message that includes your contact info and the nature of your call, and then I will get back to you. And most of the time, no messages ever get left, which tells me that most of these calls are not legit. So I save myself some time and some hassle, and potentially save myself from being scammed. Both iOS and Android now have built-in call screening options. So you might want to play with those. I recently enabled that on my iPhone, where the phone now will answer a call from somebody. If somebody calls me that's not in my contact list, the phone will answer it and ask them questions. To try to ascertain who they are and what they're calling about. And I guess it'll show me on the screen that, hey, so and so, you're getting a call from so and so, and this is what they said they're calling about. I've not had seen it in progress yet, so I'm just guessing that that is how it works. And at that point, you have the option to then connect to the caller, similar to how live voicemail works, where if you have live voicemail enabled, they'll get your greeting. And they'll start to leave you a message, and you can actually read a transcript on your screen as the message is being left, or even listen into it, I believe. And if you do want to talk to them, you can tap somewhere on the screen that lets you now connect to them. Similar to how the old answering machines used to work. Remember that? You'd hear the caller leaving a message, you'd pick up your handset, and now you could talk to them. Well, now that's available on our phones as well. And again, it's a tool that you can use to help screen and filter some of this nonsense out of your life. So that's it for the phone part of this discussion. Wondering if anybody else wants to share their techniques, or maybe has some questions about some of the techniques that I discussed. Again, remember you can either raise your hand or say your name at this time, and we'll call you one way or the other. Going once,
Robert,
going. Oh, Robert, go ahead.
I was just waiting to see if anyone else wanted to, but I'm back inside, so it should be better now.
Much better.
yeah. Anyhow, so I do have that set up in my phone for when people are not in my contacts, and I've seen it. I've gone to the phone app and watched it, and it says basically I see the transcript, and it'll say. Something like Robert would like to know who's calling and what the call is about. And so then it tells me that Julian is calling regarding a doctor's appointment or something to that effect. And I have the options of either sending the person to voicemail or answering the call, all those types of things. It's very cool. I like it. So, the other thing that I would say is that typically, a lot of times I get calls from doctor's offices, and if I answer it, they'll say, One in particular will tell me, "Well, we need you to give us your birth date and your, some other information." And I'll say, "No, I wasn't expecting you to call, so I'm not sure if this is or not. So I will call back later." I hang up on them, and I either can, if I have the time right now, or right then, or later, I will call the doctor's office back that was supposedly calling me and say, "Yeah, I received a phone call earlier. I'm wondering if it was you guys or not." And they're like, "No, we weren't calling today. So, so it's really a good thing if you receive someone." A lot of these places will fake call a doctor's office, and you don't know if it is or not. And I would just not give out personal information. You can always, in the doctor's offices, they're aware of it, and they understand if you want to call back, even if it is them, you're better to be safe and call back later and give that information to the real people. So I would suggest those. I think I would suggest also changing your passwords on things occasionally. I do that all the time with Facebook, especially. You never know. People are always trying to get information off of Facebook, so I would constantly change my passwords there.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And we're gonna have a discussion about passwords here momentarily.
I
So
bet. Yeah, exactly.
we'll
So,
get to that.
yeah,
But
I think
one
I'll
thing
leave
I
it there. Yeah.
well, oh, thank you. And one thing I'm gonna add to what you said, and it's something I'm also gonna mention later, is that anybody who you do business with regularly or communicate regularly, you should create a contact entry in your phone. And so that way, that also lets you know that the person who's calling you is somebody who's actually on your contact list, and that's also how they will get past your screening stuff. So, if your doctor's office has certain numbers that they call you from, and sometimes that could be a little tricky because sometimes they're on a PBX and they got a bunch of outgoing lines, so sometimes you have to have little by little capture all the numbers they call from. You should see my entry for access and their call out numbers. I got a whole list of them, and every time I get a call out from somebody new, from a new number that calls to give me a call out, I add them to that access contact so that way it will always bypass the call screening stuff, and also just give me a little bit more of assurance that hey, this is somebody that I actually do transact with. So yeah, and also when you're going to call them back, this is why this is also important. When you're going to call them back, never call back a number if you're suspicious. Don't call back the number they leave in a message. Call back your known good number that you have for them in a contact list. So this is important for anybody, banks, anything you do business with. As soon as you start a business relationship with them, add them to your contacts with their known good number, the one that's on the back of your credit card, things like that. So that way, when you have to call them back to verify, you don't have to worry, am I dialing the scammer on a number that they're having me call through? You're going to call the known good number that you stored for them long before you got the particular phone call that you're suspicious of. So that's a good strategy there. So thanks for that, Robert. Anybody else with any strategies or thoughts or questions about the phone aspect of this discussion? Because we are going to get to passwords and things like that here momentarily. All right, hearing none, we will move along. So, online, one thing you definitely want to do, and I know you're probably sick of hearing it, but it never hurts to hear it again. Do not click on links that are known or unexpected that pop up to you, especially when in your browser, again, doing Google searches and things like that. And something might pop up and say, hey, here's this offer, or hey, your security may be compromised here. Click this link and we'll fix it for you. Close the page immediately if you see stuff like that. But also in your email, also in your text messages, in your social media, anything like that, over-the-top messaging app, WhatsApp, things like that, you name it. Scamsters are out there and they're constantly on the prowl and they're constantly throwing links at you that they hope you're going to click on because they look like they're a legit site. But they're really not. Anybody can copy the look of anybody's web page and make a fake site that to the even the casual user, even a sighted person, can be fooled by these things. So Don't click those links. Always, again, it ties back to what I just talked about. Create a known good contact for people. Include websites, include phone numbers, include anything like that that you use to contact that business legitimately. And that way, when you are confronted with these things, you don't ever have to click the link that shows up. You have a contact already that has the known good contact info. That's it for the online stuff with text messages, emails, and social media, things like that, links. Again, I'll open it up. Anybody have any questions or comments or technique that they have found to be effective when fighting this aspect of online safety? Raise your hand or speak up now. All right, hearing none, we will mosey on along to the next section. Logins and passwords. Simple and easy to remember passwords are a thing of the past. I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but gone are the days where you could use monkey123 or your name and somebody's birthday or things like that as passwords. Those are very weak passwords, and the hackers have programs that very easily try all these combinations, known combinations. And not just stuff that they guess at, by the way, stuff that they've gotten from data breaches that have happened where username and passwords have been leaked. So they put those into these programs, and those are the things they try first, or known passwords that are already in use out there, especially if they see that they're commonly used. So that idea that you can use a simple and easy password and you can use it everywhere on the internet, is a thing of the past and is actually putting you at great risk of being hacked. Passwords need to be long, complex. They should contain mixed characters, not just upper and lower case letters and numbers, but punctuations, all kinds of things. And in other words, they're not easy to remember when you do this, but this is what it takes to stay safe these days. And they should also be unique to each site. Never use the same password on more than one site for a login, especially for your email, especially for your banks, especially for your online shopping. You know, when let's say a phone carrier has a data breach, and in that data breach, they got a bunch of username and passwords that their customers use. Well, what Mr. Hacker is going to do, who found it on the dark web, because they didn't even have to be the one who hacked T-Mobile or your carrier or anybody. They could just go on the dark web and very easily find this stuff. It's dumped out there or sold for very little to people. So they will go and try your password that for your carrier. They'll say, "Hey, let's try that on gmail.com. Hey, let's try that on bankofamerica.com. Let's try that on Citibank. Let's try it on Chase. Let's try it on eBay. Let's try it on Amazon. Let's try it on DoorDash. Let's try it on Uber." You get the point. They try it because they know that some people will use the same combination, username and password, and usually the username is an email address. They'll use it in multiple places. So before you know it, they got your info that was dumped out of a phone carrier a data breach. And now they'll try it on Gmail. And guess what? If that's what you use for Gmail, now they've commandeered your email account. And I don't need to tell you that once somebody has your main email account, that's the key to everybody else, to every other thing that you do business with. Because a lot of times, if you say, "I forgot my password," well, the first thing they do is say, "Give us your email address." Well, they'll put in your email address and they have your password, and the first thing they did is lock you out of it. So now you can't get in there and change it. And now they'll go to all these places and say, "Forgot my password, forgot my password." And inevitably, they're going to land on a thing or two that you do business with. And now they've got you there and they've locked you out of that. So you see how this very quickly can become a horrible nightmare. So avoid it all. Do not use the same username and password combo on more than one site. So you're saying to yourself, how do I manage all these different unique logins? How do I manage these crazy long passwords that he's telling me to do? Well, password managers, that is very helpful. It's what I've been using now for many years, and it can be a little bit of a hassle and a bit of a learning curve to learn them at first, but once you get the hang of it, it really is not all that much harder to use, and they're integrated into a lot of things. So, for example, I like Bitwarden is the one that I use, but there's other ones out there. 1Password is good. Apple has its own password manager. Different platforms may do that. I'm sure Android, Google has their own as well. So they're out there. Find the one that works best for you. I just happen to like ones like Bitwarden and 1Password because they are independent. They work on all the platforms. So that way, I don't have to worry. Like if I only use Apple Password Manager, how's that going to work when I'm on Windows? How's that going to work when I'm on my Android phone or on my Android powered note taker or something like that? You want something that's going to work universally. And that's where things like Bitwarden and 1Password do a really good job. They're very easy to use, they're accessible, and I just think, yeah, they're a lifesaver. Whenever possible, another thing you should do is enable two-factor authentication on websites that you log into regularly, especially things that are critical to your life, like your bank, your finances, and things like that. It's better to have, as many speed bumps as you can put on the road to a hacker, the better you are. Because at the very least, even if they got some of your info in a data breach, you might catch on to it quick enough that you can go in there and stop them from doing more damage. So, use your two-factor authentication again. It adds a little bit of another step, a hassle that you have to deal with. But unfortunately, it is what's required. It's like having multiple locks on your door. Sometimes one isn't enough. Something else I've been seeing more of is something called pass keys. And I've played with them a little, but I'm still learning about them as I go. The idea with passkey is that instead of having to remember long, complex passwords, they make use of the biometric reader that's in all of our devices nowadays, the Face ID, the Touch ID, things like that. They rely on that and they store something, I guess, on that device, or almost like a second factor authentication thing. When you try to log in, let's say on your computer, to something that you've already set up on your phone with a passkey, I believe that it sends you something on your phone and says, "Hey, is that you trying to log in? Authenticate yourself with your biometric, your face or your fingerprint." So that's something to look into as well. And we'll go to data breaches. This is what makes this all possible. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. These days, just about any company out there has had at least some form of data breach, and some of them have had multiple data breaches, which means that your info floats around out there. And again, it's on the dark web for sale for very little. Your login to your bank means everything to you, but to a hacker, it might mean a tenth of a Bitcoin or something like that. So you don't want to make it easy for them, so you have to protect yourself. So, something else that I'm going to say is, unless it's absolutely required, do not give people your social security number. It was never meant to be used to identify yourself outside of the government or for taxpayer purposes or things like that, benefits. So, if just because somebody asks you for your social security number in the process of signing up for something, it doesn't mean you have to give it. The only time that you may have to do it is if somebody needs to run your credit. So, for example, a carrier that you're opening up a line of service with is going to want to run your credit to make sure, especially if you're applying for postpaid service, meaning that you're billed after the fact. They want to run your credit and see how likely you are or how worthy of a risk are you credit-wise. So for things like that, you kind of have no choice. But there's a lot of other stuff out there, people, offices, things like that, that will ask you for this. And there's no really, they're not really a good reason for it. So don't give it. If it's not absolutely mandatory to the process that you're trying to accomplish, don't give it. Don't feel shy to say, "Do I really need to give that, or is that optional?" And that goes, by the way, for any information they're asking you, contact info even. Don't, just because they ask for it doesn't mean you have to give it. Never be afraid to ask, is this mandatory or is it optional? Now, if you feel that you might be at risk, maybe you've been notified that your data has been breached or something like that, you might think of doing an extreme thing like going to the credit reporting agencies and freezing your credit. So this would be like TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian, for example, are three of the main credit reporting agencies here in the country. And it's something that you want to do. In fact, I'm in the process of learning, establishing that myself, because very recently I was contacted because somebody tried to use my info to apply for a credit card. And again, I got one of these calls saying it's so-and-so from some card. And yeah, we've received a correspondence in your name attempting to open up a line of credit. We need to know if this is you. So, of course, I sent that to voicemail. I thought it kind of sounded scammy at first. But I did a little research, and then I, through my credit card company, I have access to something called Credit Journey. It's a benefit that's offered to the customers of that bank. And you can actually check things like inquiries to your credit. So I went there and saw that, yes, somebody had put in a high, that same bank that called me had put an inquiry on my credit on behalf of somebody who was trying to apply for credit in my name. So I called that bank back and we stopped that cold. They sent me something in the mail verifying that basically that they made contact with me and they had stopped it. So that person was ultimately unsuccessful in what they wanted to do because they obviously had some info, but not all the info they needed, or some algorithm somewhere flagged that application as suspicious and said, "Hey, we better check to make sure that this is the right thing." So I'm in the process now of looking into freezing my credit because really the only time you need your credit unfrozen is if you're going to apply for any kind of credit. Like, for example, if you're going to apply for a new line of phone service, if you're going to finance a car, or if you're moving into a new apartment or something like that, all these things that require credit checks, they're going to hit a stumbling block if your credit is frozen. So you want to find out who the agency is that they will use to run your credit, and then go to that one and temporarily unfreeze your credit. You're supposed to be able to do that free of charge. There are laws on the books now that mandate that the credit card or the credit reporting agencies give you that flexibility. Now, they may not always want to make it easy for you to do because let's face it, if your credit is frozen, they can't sell your info either, and that's part of how they make money. So they don't like us doing this, but it is absolutely our right to do it. And especially if we think we have been compromised or at risk of it, that's what you do. You freeze your credit, and that way no one can apply for any kind of credit in your name. It stops them cold. So, are there any questions about what I just said, or does anybody want to share their own techniques on how they keep themselves safe online, especially with the stuff I was just discussing with finances? Please raise your hand, speak your name, let yourself be known.
Matthew?
Matthew, go ahead.
Yeah, you were talking about the password manager. Well, how does that work? Do you go to like Bitwarden? Do you pay them a monthly fee or annually, or how does it work that way?
Bitwarden happens to provide their service for free. They are an open source project, if you will.
Wow.
Now they do accept donations,
Okay.
and they do sell corporate type services. So big entities, companies that use their services have to pay them for what they do, but they also get enterprise level type security access or capabilities that maybe people like you and I don't need. Like, for example, how to share passwords with certain employees in certain
Yeah.
departments and not to others. So, it is for free. I don't know. I think one password does charge. So you'll find a lot of them out there do charge. Apple, I don't think charges. I don't think Google does either. So those are all your free options. But again, Bitwarden is free of charge and it works quite well.
No, thank you. I'll look into that. And just you were just mentioning about credit freeze. Do you contact your credit card and tell them, this is me. I would like you to freeze my credit.
No, you contact the credit reporting agency. So
Oh.
either Experian, Equifax, or TransUnion, you contact them and you go through the process of verifying yourself. And then you say you want to freeze your credit. I'm looking into doing this because I think they all have apps now. And I would like to basically have apps on my phone. And I'm hoping that it's just as simple as I launch the app and I freeze the credit. And if I need to unfreeze it, I can go into the app and unfreeze it temporarily when
Tap
I'm going
and
to use
tap.
it. Yeah. So I'm hoping for that. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. You're welcome, Matthew. Anybody else with any questions, comments, or tips of their own they want to share? Going once, going twice. Anybody?
Me, Jamie.
Oh, Jamie, go ahead.
This is with regards to Facebook. I'm not sure if it's called passkeys. I think it is. I've discovered that, of course, it's going to either generate a password for you and you'll be able to use your face ID, or I guess you can also put your own password, but later on they will ask you to authenticate using your face ID or your thumbprints. However, for the computer, since you won't be able to, some computers don't have face ID or imprint as thumbprints. So what they will do is they will send you, because they have your info, they will send you either an email or a text message with a six-digit code. And when you log in, you type your username on your computer, and when, of course, they ask you to type the code, that six-digit code that they give you.
Okay, so it behaves a little like two-factor. Yeah, so that's cool. And again, the beauty of that is that the hacker that maybe stumbled on your Facebook login doesn't have your phone.
Nope.
So this gives you the opportunity to stop that cold. So good stuff. Thank you for that.
That's it.
All righty. Anybody else with any questions or techniques or info that they want to share about any of the techniques that I described or techniques that maybe I left out? Going once, going twice. All righty. So I guess that's that for that discussion. So before we go into the discussion of smart glasses, particularly Ally Solos and my experience with them, I just want to briefly mention that if you don't know, I am Julian Vargas. I call myself a mobile access technology specialist, which means that I focus on learning or teaching the accessibility options available to users of mobile devices, whether it be iOS, Android, etc. Not only the operating system and the built-in screen reader, but also apps that you can use, devices that you can connect with them to gain access to things that you ordinarily don't have access or difficult access to as a result of lack or low vision. So I do training. Both to individuals and small groups. So sometimes you may be listening to this and thinking, man, I'd like to, have an hour with this guy and pick his brain about this subject or that subject, or just have him look or over my phone and see if it's optimized the way that I want it to work, things like that. that's one of the services I offer. Tech support. So, if you just want to better understand it, maybe want to get the most out of it, maybe you feel like these things have so many options and capabilities and don't understand them, and maybe want somebody to sit down and help you make a little more sense of it. That's or or you just got the thing and you want to know how to make it work, and you want somebody to call to help you with that. That's a service that I offer. Coaching, especially for other trainers, if you're in this field and maybe you want to learn a little bit more about the techniques that I have found to be successful, is something that I offer as well. As well as shopping, if you just want somebody to help you go and shop for the phone or help you shop for phone plans or things like that, and you don't know all the right questions to ask and you want to make sure that you're getting all your needs met, I provide that as well. So my services are both in person and virtual. And I my pricing is reasonable, and it's available to anybody who wants it. So I can be reached at my website, www.techjv.com. My phone number, 818-794-9554. And that, by the way, is another way that you can help support what we're doing here at BBB, because the money that pays for the Zoom and things like that comes out of my pocket. So yeah, by keeping me working, you're helping me to be able to continue to provide this service. So now let's talk about the Ally Solos glasses.
Oh, this is Denise. I just had a question. Does that include WhatsApp? Because I'm having difficulties with that one.
Yeah, anything. Just call me, and contact me offline, and we can discuss it further.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. All right, so Ally Solos glasses. It's something I was really looking forward to. They're made by Envision AI, so the same people who bring the Envision glasses and the Envision AI app, and now the Ally app that is what they're eventually transitioning to. The Envision AI app still works as well, but I think over time is going to be deprecated, and they're really hoping to put all their eggs in the Ally basket. But yeah, let's hope they make some improvements before that happens. So, you know, I know that it was a choice of them or the Echo Vision glasses by Agiga, but I ultimately chose, you know, I had to choose one. I couldn't do both, but I went with the one that I thought would be best only because of their presence in the market already. They've been serving our community for quite a while through the apps that I mentioned before and the Ally Envision glasses. So I thought, you know, these guys have some skin in the game. They've been around for a while. It's not a startup. So maybe we're going to get something that comes out of the gate pretty good. And the description sounded good. The battery life is exceptional. I mean, it's by far the longest battery life of any smart glasses that are out there these days, especially for use by us. So I went with them, and I also took advantage of an ultra early bird special that they offered right at the beginning, even before they opened the general public, for those who had tested the Ally app, which I was an early beta tester of. And back then I was pretty impressed with what I had seen in that app, and I thought it was for sure going to continue to progress along, and putting something like that on glasses I felt was going to be a winning combination. So I did eventually receive them in late October. They said they would ship sometime in October, and they did, so they were true to their word on that. But I quickly discovered that in their present form, they were just not going to meet my needs. I've been using the Meta glasses for well over a year now, and some of you already have heard me say it, that they are a life-changing for me. I wear them all the time. I use them every single day, and they are so helpful in so many ways, and not just the having it read things to me or identify things to me or things like that, but also in just being able to take pictures and take videos and things like that. I'm so much better doing that with glasses because I'm wearing them, and again, it's right there on my face. I don't have to do very much to get it going. I don't have to unlock a phone, launch an app, hit this button and that button to eventually get it going, and then have to steady my phone in one hand with the camera and keep walking around with my cane. It's just wearables, especially smart glasses, just make this process so much easier. And I was hoping that I was going to have an enhanced version of what I had with Meta, being that it was an AI that is being trained to help us. So, you know, with Meta glasses, sometimes you have to be creative in how you ask it for things, because it is a little bit more worried about perception of privacy or perception of giving information that it shouldn't. So sometimes you have to be creative in asking it to read certain things to you. But it's doable. I find workarounds all the time with it. And I was hoping that with the Ally Solos glasses that I was not going to have to be so creative when I asked for information. But one of the things that I really don't like or didn't like about the experience was that the Ally app, at least for now, I'm hoping that eventually they'll change that. And I think they will. The potential is there because if Meta can do it, so can Ally. But right now, the Ally app has to be open and in the foreground to start the conversation with the Ally or the AI. They call it an Ally because you're going to have different personalities you can design in there. So it means that if I'm walking down the street and I want to know, hey, what is this building I'm approaching? Hey, what is that sign that's in front of me? I have to stop what I'm doing, take out my phone, launch the Ally app, and then hit something on the screen, or tap the side panel, which at the time that I had them was sort of hit and miss. I understand they're making improvements to that as the time goes on. But it completely breaks my flow. And it wasn't working for me, and at least for the time being, it just wasn't the thing that I wanted. They came with a 30-day money back guarantee, and I took them up on that. I learned very early on, like I said, that they were not going to be for me. So I started the process on November 3rd, where I said, "Okay, guys, I need an RMA and start the refund process." I should point out that their communication left something to be desired, and I understand it's a new product they were launching, and I don't think they were prepared for all the communication that they were going to get. But at the same time, I think that they could have been a little clearer in some of their communication in the beginning. Certainly, in communicating or better relaying the expectation that one should have about what this product is going to be. They made the rounds, so a lot of podcasts and platforms and email for sure. There's lots of marketing that went into the pre-launch of these glasses. But I don't think any of it, at least to me, communicated the right expectation to have when you get them. So I got the refund fully on November 19th. So basically, about 2 weeks, give or take, it took between the time I first asked and then had conversations and emails back and forth and things like that before I finally got the refund. The refund did not include the shipping cost that I paid up front to get them, nor did it include the shipping cost that I had to pay to send them back to them. But, they didn't promise that. It would have been nice if they had done that as a courtesy, but they didn't promise it, so I didn't hold them to it. But and my personal opinion, and again, this is just I underscore in my personal opinion, because I'm not speaking for anybody else. I don't think these glasses, this combo of glasses and app, was quite ready for prime time. I think sometimes companies try too hard to get something out on the market as soon as they can so that they could be the first. But sometimes there's something to be said about taking your time and making sure that something is a little more ready for the public before you release it. As I said earlier, communication left something to be desired. I hope that as time goes on and the dust settles, that they will improve upon that because that doesn't always leave a good taste in people's mouths. And don't get me wrong. I have no ill will toward Envision or these glasses. I'm rooting for them, actually. I'm really hoping that they will succeed. We absolutely need more competition in this space, and we need products that are geared toward us. The mainstream stuff like Meta and things like that and ChatGPT are wonderful, but at the end of the day, they're not made for us. So we're having to learn how to make use of it and find workarounds to make it beneficial to us. So there's really something to be said about companies that are approaching it from the other side, saying, "Hey, we want to use AI and we want to specially train it to be able to best help the target audience, which in our case is the blind and low vision user." So I'm very much rooting for these glasses, and I said to them at the time of my communications with Envision, and I'll say it here as well, I am open to conversations with you guys. If my feedback could help you in any way, if I can provide anything, I'm happy to do it. I'm all about beta testing. I'm all about trying things. I'm all about helping the efforts, not hurting. So I'm here. And I'm willing to help make these work because I think it's a good thing. I should also mention that the glasses themselves, I enjoyed them. I like the feel of them. They were very lightweight. The audio on them, I know I've read that some people don't like it compared to Meta, but I'll tell you, and maybe it's just because of my hearing, but they have more high end to them. And in noisier environments, I find it easier to hear things with high end than things with a lot of low and bass and treble. So for me, I like the audio of the Ally glasses, especially when they for hearing my phone, my screen reader on the phone, and stuff like that. So I like them. I like the feel of them. I like their idea that, that they're the way they do batteries is a little different. The batteries are the arms of the glasses, if you will. Each arm of the glass is a there's a little stem that plugs into it, and that stem is a battery. Each battery has a USB-C connector on it, so if you want to charge them separately, you can. They're also eventually going to sell spare stems. So if you want to keep extras in your pocket, if you're a real heavy-duty user, you're going to be able to do that. And it has a wireless charger that, when you clamp it to the left arm of the glasses at a certain place where the magnet sticks to, it'll now charge both batteries on the thing simultaneously, and that is their recommended way of charging them. So I liked a lot of things about the glasses. Don't get me wrong. Just because they weren't for me, it doesn't mean I'm hating on them. I want them to succeed. I hope they work. And I think they have a lot of potential, but I think, yeah, they may need to go back to the drawing board on a few things and hopefully make it better. So, what am I going to do in the future? I'm going to be watching what Agiga puts out with their Echo Vision glasses. I'm going to have good hands-on experience with them because my good buddy Robert lives next door and he's getting them, so I'll get to play with them as well. I also have a good client of mine that is getting them as well, and I know he's going to want me to go over there and do some training with him and set up and all that. So between them and stuff I read and come across in places, I think I'm going to have a pretty good idea and knowledge base on those glasses, and hopefully be able to share it with all of you as well. But for me personally, I am strongly considering getting newer versions of Metas because the newer versions now have much better battery life. So I'm particularly looking at the Oakley Vanguards because they have 9 hours of battery life. The camera is in the center as opposed to the side, which, I don't know if it really makes all that much of a difference, but ever since I saw the Aira Horizon glasses when they came out with those, the camera in the center to me just seemed to make the most sense, as opposed to it being on the side where I had to maybe tilt my head differently to show somebody on the other end what I'm seeing. So that's what I'm looking at, and I know there's sales going on, so I'm probably gonna pick up a pair of those because, like I said, I use these glasses every single day. So for me to not have to stop and charge them as often is a plus, and I think we're all well worth the cost that I'm gonna have to incur. And especially now that I got my money back for the Ally glasses, I can put it right toward those, and we'll see how that goes. And again, I will keep you posted. Another good thing I forgot to mention, Meta is going to be opening up the platform. They're going to be making an SDK available that makes it possible for third-party apps to be able to run on these glasses. Kind of the way that Be My Eyes runs on the glasses. That was a special collaboration that took place between Be My Eyes and Meta. And now they make that available to other companies. I think that's going to be great. There's already talk of Seeing AI, the app that we use now on iOS and on Android now, very popular app. That's going to be available when this becomes available. And I imagine that Aira is probably going to put their app on there as well. So I think that, and who knows, maybe someday we'll be able to run the Ally app on Meta glasses. How about that? So yeah, I think there's a lot of possibilities in the future, and for right now, I think I'm going to put my money more in the mainstream devices that will hopefully be able to run the blindness apps that we need, and at the same time, keep an eye on the blindness market of the wearables and see how that progresses and see what I'll want to buy maybe next year. So that's my thing there on the Ally Solos glasses, my experiences and impressions. I wonder if anybody has any questions about what I just said, or if any of you got these glasses and what your experiences are. I'm opening the floor now. Again, raise your hand or speak your name. Either one works. Going once, going twice. No questions? Did any of you consider? Oh, wait,
This
here's
is
yours.
Andy.
Oh, Andy, go ahead.
Okay, what exactly is it that you didn't like about the Solo glasses, other than the fact that you have to have the app running in the foreground? You kept saying something like, "Well, they weren't for me. They weren't for me." What is it exactly that you didn't like about them?
Well, that was one of the main complaints. The other thing is the AI. I felt I think it needs more work. One of the things you're supposed to be able to do with these allies that you customize is tailor it to give you the responses that you're looking for. So, for example, I trained one of the allies to say, "I don't want AI to be my friend. I have enough of those in real life. I only want the answers to the questions, stripped of all the pleasantries and such that would normally be heard from by communicating with friends, something to that effect." And it said, "Okay, I got it. You want no fluff. You want just straight to the point, the facts, all that. Great. Well, I would, end the session, come back later, and do something else." And again, it would start with the overly friendly and pleasantries and things like that. As if I hadn't told it already that I didn't want that. When you're having it read a document to you, I would say, "Okay, read this to me." And then it would say, "Okay, remember to line up the glasses and do this and do that." It'd give you a whole list of stuff. And I would say, "Okay, I got those instructions. I no longer need you to repeat those instructions every time I launch you. When I say read the document, I just want you to take the picture and start reading. And save all the descriptions for afterward, because it wants to describe the layout of the document, all that stuff." I told it, "I want the writing first and then all the descriptions after." And again, it would do that the first one or two times, but then when I'd go back later, it would revert back to its old behavior. So that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. And also the ability to call the glasses. I don't want to have to either launch an app or tap the side of the glasses a certain amount of times to get it to listen to me. I want to have a wake word, just like I do with Meta. And they have what they call the walkie-talkie mode. But at this time, or at least at the time that I had them, it involved, again, going into the app, starting the conversation with the ally, and then opening up a menu that then put it in the walkie-talkie mode. But it wouldn't leave it there. As soon as you ended that session and went back later, I had to start the whole process all over again. So for me, it was too time consuming. There was more of a delay, even without all that extra stuff, in processing, which I think had probably something to do with a bunch of people trying to do this at once. So they're going to have to increase the speed there a little bit. So it's just stuff like that that just made me realize these are not for me. And I didn't want to be outside of the range of my chargeback rights, because again, I didn't know for sure that I was going to get a refund. I took them at their word, but given the communications issues that I was experiencing, especially in the beginning with them, it made me a little nervous, and I felt like, hey, I want to make sure that if they drop the ball and they decide to run the clock out, that I still had the ability to tell my credit card, "Hey, I want my money back. I want you to charge this back." So that's why I did that. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Anything else?
Nope.
All
I
righty.
do have a question on Jose Mendez.
Okay, so Andy, you're done?
Yes.
Okay. All right, thanks, Andy. Appreciate your question. Okay, Jose Mendez, go ahead.
What would be the difference between on the prices between the Meta and the ones that you talked about?
The Meta and the Oakleys.
Yes.
I think the Oakleys might be $100 more than the Meta. Well, the Meta Gen 2s, those I think are like 379. So they are a little bit more than the first generation Metas that I currently have. So even if I decided to go with the Ray-Ban Metas, the second gen, it's still going to be a little bit more because, again, it's more capability. The Gen 2 Ray-Bans also have good battery life. I think they give you 8 hours of battery life, so it's still pretty good. And again, I'm looking at Oakley, but I want to go and try them both on before I make my final decision. So I think the difference in price, it might be roughly $100, give or take.
Different. No, thank you.
You're quite welcome, Jose. And another thing I like about the Oakleys is that they're better. They have better dust and water resistance than the Ray-Bans. And also, since they're made for athletes, people that are going to be running or bike riding, they claim that they're going to have a windscreen in them that if you're in winds of up to 30 miles an hour, your voice is still clearly heard. So I imagine that even though I'm not doing any of that stuff, but if I'm out on even a breezy day, maybe the AI is going to hear me better. Maybe if I'm doing a phone call with somebody, they're going to hear me better and not be drowned out by the wind. So that's another reason I'm looking at the Oakleys too.
Julian, I heard recently that there's actually a Meta store in West Hollywood, where
Yes,
you
I plan.
actually a physical store.
Yep, I'm planning to go there. I'm planning to go there, and that's exactly it. We're lucky to have one here. So I do plan to go there and try stuff on before I decide. And Meta was very nice enough to send me a promo code that will also knock $100 off of anything Meta that I want to buy between now and the end of the year. So I plan to make use of that.
Can you share where exactly the story is?
I don't know the address, but again, if you research, you ask your smart speaker or maybe Google. I imagine if you type in Meta store in Los Angeles, that should probably come up with something.
Got it.
That's how I find a lot of my addresses. So thank you for that. Does anybody else have any questions or comments or anything about smart glasses in general? We could just open it up.
Did they have a line where you can actually input your suggestions or your comments?
Does who have?
Both either Meta or the other glasses.
Well, as far as the Ally glasses, when I was in communication, I did talk to somebody on the phone, had a couple conversations with somebody about them, and I made myself available to them and said, feel free to contact me. And they said they would if they wanted. So I'm sure they probably have I'm sure you could write to support at ally.me or anything like that as well and give suggestions. But I'm sure they're not any. I can tell you this much. I gave my opinions here, but I'm on various mailing lists and I'm seeing a lot of stuff written about these glasses. And I can tell you, I'm not the only one who has had the same experience. This experience I relate to you all. So I'm sure they're getting it in spades. They're getting lots of feedback. But I make myself available to these companies anytime. If I could be of help, if I could provide feedback, I'm happy to give it. Anybody else with any questions or anything about these glasses?
Yeah, Tom Lang here. Okay,
Okay.
perfect.
Okay, hang on. Tom Lang, and then I think that might have been Rachel. So go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, so you've mentioned Oakley. Is that a different brand entirely than Meta?
Well, they're a different brand than Ray-Ban. Uh,
Oh,
the
yeah.
the technology is still the same. It's the same innards, the same AI, roughly the same stuff. I don't think you're going to get any better any different behavior from the AI interactions between either brand. It's just that Ray-Bans is one maker of these type of glasses, and Oakley is another.
Okay, and is the price basically a difference, a function of the design of the glasses as opposed to the software.
Yeah, the and this has always been the case with the Meta glasses from the start. The prices vary depending on especially the type of lenses that you wanted in the glasses. So, for example, the first generation Meta, the starting price I think was $299. So, and that was with clear lenses. But if you wanted tinted lenses, if you wanted transitions, if you wanted anything like that, that would make the price go up. And Oakley, you know, they are a fashionable brand. They are not a cheap brand of glasses. So, a lot of what you're paying for is the name and the
Okay.
style.
So, if I was, I currently have the first gen Meta or Ray-Ban. So, if I wanted to go with the upgraded Ray-Ban, I wouldn't be losing anything in terms of software or anything like that. Just
No,
it's, yeah.
you're going to get the same thing. It's basically the same behavior. You're just get, but what you are getting is better battery life. The cameras in them, I think, are supposed to be a little better than the first gen. So things like that. But the behavior of the AI, the interaction, I don't expect there to be a difference.
Okay.
All right, thanks for that. And go ahead, Rachel, if that was you. Or whoever it was that doubled with Tom.
It was Rachel. It was me.
Oh, you, okay.
It
Jamie, go
was
ahead.
Jamie. I don't know the exact location to the Meta store for those of you who are asking questions, but it's called, to make it easier for you to kind of Google it or whatever with it, it's called Meta Lab LA. And it's in Melrose. I don't know the exact street address, but it's in Melrose Avenue.
Okay, so it's somewhere on Melrose Avenue. It's called Meta Lab LA. Awesome. Okay, thanks for that. So there you have it, folks. Meta Lab LA. And it's on Melrose Avenue somewhere. So you could probably ask your lady A to give the address. Anybody else with any questions or comments about these glasses?
No, I just want to say thank you for the information and taking the time to explain us step by step.
Oh, you're very welcome. And thank you for attending because it's people like you who come and ask the questions or share your feedback that make this the effort that it is. It's like, you know, it's not just me speaking. There's more than me, and everybody has their own little bit of knowledge and their own a different perspective. And together, we make a recording of something that really helps a lot of people. Whereas if I had just sat there and narrated everything I narrated in the beginning and didn't have the feedback from you guys, I don't think that would be nearly as compelling or as interesting. So I appreciate when people like you take the time to join us and share with us. Anybody else with any comments, questions?
Robert.
Go ahead, Robert.
So I think the communication that you had with the with that company, it just goes to, you're not the only one, and I'm sure you know that from all the emails you're probably seeing. I had originally emailed them to ask if I could upgrade the old Envision glasses that I have to the Solos, and I think I emailed them like three or four times, called them on the phone, never got through, and I just never heard anything. So I have the original Envision, I mean not Envision, but the glasses from them that are just sitting there collecting dust because nothing else to do with them. And I thought, well, even if I had to pay a stiff price to upgrade them or return them and go with the Solos, that would be cool, but they don't even want to talk to you. So their communication really lacks something. So, but unfortunately, I see that with the Giga company as well. However, they have just hired two new people for handling tech support and communication. So I'm hoping that by the time I get my Giga glasses, that means that they're really trying to communicate with their customers and move forward. So their communication since last year hasn't been the best. And so I'm seeing that in all these companies. I don't think it's just, one company over the other. And I've tried contacting Meta. They don't return your calls or emails. So it really isn't one, it's most of them. So,
Yeah.
and
And here's the thing, in all fairness, Envision is a much smaller company than somebody like Meta. But
Right.
as you very well pointed out, Meta is a huge company, and good luck getting a hold of somebody there. So yeah,
Right.
there's something to be said. The only thing that you can say though is that Meta, you can buy them in different retailers. You don't have to just buy it in their store. You can buy it at Lens Crafters. You can buy it on Amazon. And if you have an issue, it's very easy to return them to where you bought them and get an instant refund.
That is
So
true.
that is something to be said about that. But and again,
No,
I didn't want to come off as that I'm attacking Envision or ripping them to
right.
shreds or anything like that. They're a small company, and they are understandably overwhelmed when
Yes.
you put out a product like this, and it gets all this attention. And yeah, it's unfortunately having a bit of a rough landing. So,
Right.
you know,
And
but it.
I agree with you. By our next meeting, I think you said sometime in December, I will have the Giga glasses. They're supposed to be shipped to me between December 1st and December 10th. There are some things that I'm already hearing that I'm not sure I like with them. I'm going to hold comment about that until I get them and play with them. But I'm hoping that the same thing doesn't happen with a Giga. They've got 300 people that they're shipping the glasses to in early December. And so all of those 300 people, including me, are pioneers, which means that we're going to be early beta testers. And so, as Julian, most people on the call know, beta testing means that there's bugs, that there's this and that and the other, and you're willing to help advance the product forward. And so I'm willing to do that. They're giving a 30-day just like the Envision glasses. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to getting them and playing with them, and I'll keep everyone posted.
Here's one question I have for you regarding that. Is that 30 days from when you get the Pioneer version, or is that 30 days after you receive the full version that they're supposed to give you next year?
That's a good question that I have already asked, and that is from the point that I get these glasses, which are the Pioneer, I have 30 days. And so what I can tell you with that is that the only thing that's going to change with the Pioneer glasses versus the final version of the glasses that will be released in probably sometime in the first quarter next year, is the fact that they're going to have 50% better battery life. So whatever the battery life is now with the Pioneer version will be 50% greater with the final version. With that being said, they're not going to change the frames, so they won't have different sizes of glasses. They won't have any, nothing will be different other than 50% better battery life.
So basically, the only hardware that's changing is the battery.
Correct.
Okay, then I guess that makes sense. Because I was about to say, boy, they might want to rethink that, but that might make sense. So,
I
okay, very
agree.
good. Well, like I mentioned before, I'm looking forward to some hands-on with them
There you
and
go.
learning what they do and all that,
Yep, me too.
and we'll see how this goes. I like the approach that you're taking. See, I think that's what I mean by tailoring the expectation, is that they're letting you know, okay, what we're putting out here is just to put something in your hands to play with and to give us feedback on. This is not the full product yet. And I think that there's something to be said about that kind of transparency.
I agree
So
with that. Yep.
I hope it works out. And again, I hope the both products succeed. I think we're better off having options.
I agree. I think in the long run, it will be better for Meta, and others if there's all these different companies, whether they're just for blind people or not.
Yep.
Like you said, the more that there are means that these, oh, I got to try and beat their price. So let me beat that price. And so next thing you know, they're cheaper than when we first bought them. So,
Yep. I agree.
yep.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for that, Robert. And yeah, maybe if you have them by next month when we do the meeting, you can that'll be one of the things we'll do, because what that meeting is not going to be anything structured, so it'll just kind of be free flowing. So whatever people bring, that'll be great. All righty. Anybody else with any comments, questions about this glasses discussion? Or even the previous discussion about online self-defense and all that stuff that we talked about. Anybody with any questions about anything we talked about today? This is your last chance. Otherwise, we'll go ahead and wrap things up here. All righty. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming and participating in our meeting and contributing such great information and questions to our discussion. We always welcome suggestions for future topics, and I really would like to hear from people on what we can do to make this meeting more interesting and even more attended than it is now. It's one of the things I want to maybe talk about next month, is maybe coming up with ideas on how we could improve that process, because there's a lot of people on this mailing list, but a fraction of you show up, and I understand people have lives, there's things going on, but I want to make sure that it's not that there's something that we could be doing that we're not doing, and because we don't know that you want it, it's not happening. So I want to make sure it happens if somebody who's part of this group wants it. So thank you for attending. And again, my name is Julian Vargas. My website is www.techjv. I want to techjv.com, www.techjv.com is my website. Thank you to all those who are also listening in the podcast. So, have a good weekend, good holiday season as we have coming up. And remember to keep on breaking those blindness barriers. We'll catch you at the next one. Take care.
Thank you, Julian.
Have a Thanksgiving, Julian. Thank you.